My name is Nate Mickle. You're listening to Mickles and Dimes Layer 2, where every interview is dedicated to the simple, the practical, and the underappreciated. Gretchen Rubin is one of today's most influential and thought-provoking observers of happiness and human nature. She's the author of many best-selling books, such as The Happiness Project, Better Than Before, and The Four Tendencies, which have sold millions of copies in more than 30 languages. Her most recent book is Life in Five Senses. She's also host of the popular podcast Happier with Gretchen Rubin and founder of the award-winning Happier app, which helps people track their happiness-boosting habits. Gretchen has been interviewed by Oprah, eaten dinner with Nobel Prize winner Daniel Kahneman, walked arm-in-arm with the Dalai Lama, had her work reported on in a medical journal, been written up in The New Yorker, and been an answer on Jeopardy. After starting her career in law, she realized she wanted to be a writer while she was clerking for Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. Raised in Kansas City, she now lives in New York City with her family. I hope you enjoy learning from Gretchen Rubin today, because I always do. Gretchen, it's so great to chat today, and I'm here in Lawrence, Kansas, not too far away from where you grew up in Kansas City, so thanks so much for taking a few minutes to chat with me today.
I'm so happy to have the chance to have this conversation.
Now, tonight, literally tonight, my wife is meeting with her book club to discuss their 101st book. So the book club has been going on for 10 plus years now. And what's especially interesting about this is that their very first book, the number one book that started it all, was The Happiness Project. Oh, so I'm so excited to talk with you today, Gretchen.
Oh, that's so nice. That makes me so happy to hear that. Tell her book club I appreciate it.
I will do that as soon as we get off. So you've researched and written about happiness and habits and other topics as well. And as you think back on the things you've learned, is there an experience you've had where you learned something that you would most want to pass on to others?
Yeah, if there's one thing that I learned through my studying of happiness and that I feel like is more true with every year, and there's so many examples of how I see this playing out in my own life, it's that there is no magic one-size-fits-all solution for happiness, that no one can tell you the best way or the right way because we're all different. You know, and people will say to me, well, Gretchen, what's the secret to happiness? And I say, well, there's no one right way. And they're very dissatisfied. And then I say, well, what's the best way to cook an egg? And they say, well, it depends on how you like to eat your eggs. Or they say, I don't even like eggs. And I'm like, right, there is no one best way to cook an egg because it just depends on you. So same thing for happiness. But this is hard to learn because I think we yearn for certainties. We want to like print out a one-page PDF that will tell us the answer. And so here are some examples of how it's come up in my own life. Like one thing that was really hard for me to learn about myself is, what do I enjoy versus what do other people enjoy? What is fun for me and what is fun for other people? And one of the things I learned about myself is I don't like games. So growing up, I was on the basketball team. I was on the field hockey team and I really didn't like it. And I was a really bad athlete, but I did it because, you know, I wanted to be well-rounded and it's fun to be on a team and all these things. But it was really, really hard for me to exercise because I just didn't want to do it. And then finally I realized I don't like games and I'm not good at sports, but I realized, oh, but I can exercise. I can go for a run. I can take a class. I don't mind exercise. It's really the games I don't like. And it's funny because for a lot of people, they're like, well, it's the games that make the exercise fun. But it was actually for me, the games was making the exercise much less fun. And in not saying that it's not fun for some people, it's just, it wasn't fun for me, but it took me so long to realize that. Another example of where this came up is like, I have a really, really strong sweet tooth. And I'm one of these people that's like, I just always wanted to eat sweets. And so anytime I was trying to eat healthfully, I really like, there was a lot of noise in my head. Now, later, does this count? It's half. I deserve it. It's raining. It's my birthday. It's a celebration, all that. It was just very distracting. And then I was reading a book about Samuel Johnson, who's one of my favorite authors. And Dr. Johnson is quoted. So he walks into a party and somebody offers him wine. And he says, I can't, no, they say, do you want a little wine? And he said, I can't take a little. Abstinence is as easy to me as temperance is difficult. And when I saw that, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm the same way. I can have none or I can have a lot, but I can't have a little. I can't have half a dish of ice cream. I can't have one thin mint cookie, but I can have none. But, you know, everybody's always like, you know, follow the 80-20 rule, give yourself a cheat day. You know, don't be too strict. And then I'm like, no, but for me, it's just easier to have none. And I just didn't know that that was true of anybody. But now that I've asked around, of course, I found that many people for many kinds of strong temptations find it easier to give something up altogether. It's like, I never use a credit card. People would say to me, if it's not a strong temptation, it's easy to be moderate. So I'm moderate about like using a credit card. But some people are like, I use it too much or not at all. And so I think just recognizing that can be true about you is helpful. Not trying to cram ourselves into a single model, but if something's not working, thinking, well, maybe there's another way for me to achieve my aim, because just because something works for other people doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for me. And just because something makes other people happy doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a great route to happiness for me.
Yeah, this resonates so much with me. I'm teaching leadership right now. And when I was younger, I thought there was one best way to lead. And, you know, if we could just figure out what that best way is, if I could just learn that way, then the best leader I could be, right? And so just last week, I was teaching the contingency theory, fancy way of saying there is no one best way. In fact, all the best leaders pull from a bunch of different styles, but they do it as it is situationally appropriate. And even though that's like a simple idea, it did turn on a light bulb for me, like, okay, there is no one best way. And it sounds like this is the similar lesson you're sharing here. Like, there is no one best way to happiness. My daughter, Kyla, doesn't like games. My wife, Keisha, has a very strong sweet tooth. I can't really relate to either of those. Again, simple idea, we're different, but it actually does have some profound implications. And so how do you go about finding what works for you? Like, how do you think about figuring out the best approach that you should take to be happy?
Well, I really think that this is the great challenge of our lives because it requires self-knowledge. And of course, to be a good leader, you need self-knowledge just as much as to manage other people or to manage yourself. You need to have good self-knowledge. And it's very hard. I think it's very, very hard for us to understand ourselves. And that's why it's a challenge. And I think, so for me, I think about, I want to accept myself and I also want to expect more from myself. And that can be very hard to figure out because you're like, where do I just say like, hey, this is me. This is the natural limitations of my nature. And where is it like, hey, I should push myself. I should like go outside my comfort zone. Only each of us individually can figure out where that line is. So as part of my happiness project, I came up with a list of my 12 personal commandments. And my first commandment is to be Gretchen. And of course, everybody has to substitute their own name, be Nate. But it's sort of like, is this the kind of thing for me? Is this the kind of thing that appeals to me? Is this the kind of thing that I can do successfully? Does this feel like it's an extension of what I want to be and where I'm going? Or does it really feel like I'm trying to cram myself into someone else's model or do something that feels wrong? So say for leaders, if people are like, oh, you know, you might see a leader who's very chummy, very personable, like knows a bunch of stuff, really getting into it. And you see, oh, there's this warmth, there's this feeling of connection, but you're just not that kind of person. Like, you don't have that particular gift. So rather than trying to say like, ooh, I'm the wrong way, how do I become the right way? It's like, oh, I see that this person is connecting and that people feel like they can trust. How can I, given that I may be more reserved, or more awkward, maybe I don't have the gift of being very personable, but I also want to show this kind of connection and interest. But what's the right way for me to do it? Because I think sometimes we're like, well, if that's the right way, I got to do it that way, whether it works for me or not. You know, it's sort of the Procrustean bed where we're trying to jam ourselves into a model instead of sort of saying, well, what's the right way for me to achieve that aim? Because it's like you say with leaders, like there's many, many different ways. And probably like the best thing is to be able to mix them up rather than locking into something and just, you know, forcing it.
So I love this phrase, accept myself and expect more of myself. I interviewed Brad Stolberg recently, an author, and one of the things that he most wanted to pass on is that intense self-discipline requires intense self-compassion. So it's like balance, it's yin and yang between expecting more of ourselves but not expecting too much of ourselves. And I love this framework of, okay, what is the impact this person is having, or what is the outcome they're achieving? And that's what I want to do. I don't need to mimic their pathway.
Yes. Yes.
The mimic. Yeah.
Yes. Go ahead. Yes. Yeah. No, I think that's a great word, mimic, because it kind of, it has that flavor of you're just parroting the form rather than maybe understanding, okay, like how would I get there on my own? Well, there's some great, I can't remember it. Maybe you know it, Nate. It's a great Yogi Berra phrase where he says, like, don't copy him unless you can imitate him, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Some great thing about some guy who had all this kind of swagger. And it's like, yeah, you're mimicking the show, but you don't have the chops. But of course, Yogi Berra said it in some great way.
So yeah, I think I found it. If you can't imitate him, don't copy him.
Yes, right, right. And right, exactly. So that's the thing, is if you can't be that boss that's glad-handing and life of the party and the charisma and like standing up in front, everybody's flocking in, like, don't mimic that. Find like, well, what's my way to get, what is the value there? Because I can also have connection and engagement, but it's maybe the outward display of it would be different because I'm different and I need to find my own way to achieve that aim. But this is true with other people. And I think it's also true for ourselves that sometimes we get, and this is back to the idea of self-compassion that you were just mentioning, you know, the research shows that people think that if they're really hard on themselves when they screw up, that they'll sort of inspire themselves to try harder. But in fact, people who show themselves self-compassion are more likely to sort of get back on the horse and try again. Say, oh, that wasn't my best day, or I'll do better next time, or I learned that lesson the hard way. Because we all screw up. And it's like, what do you do when you screw up?
And I just found it so helpful to think, you know, like, what would you say to a friend if they screwed up? You know, you would encourage them. You wouldn't drop the hammer on them every time. Well, Gretchen, the theme for this podcast is simple, practical, underappreciated. And I feel like this is just such a simple, practical, underappreciated idea that there is no one best way.
Right.
And it can be so easy to just think, like, I just have to do what they do.
Yes.
Get there. Then I can be happy. But I love your framing of thinking about, okay, what do I want to achieve? And then given who I am, how can I push myself within my abilities, but still accept myself to get to the outcome that I most want?
Yes, exactly. It's funny because it sounds so obvious. It's like, that doesn't sound controversial. There's no one right way. And yet you realize that often the discussion is, this is the right way. This is the best way. This is the most efficient way. And so it is sort of revolutionary to admit that there is no one right way.
Well, and that's great coming from you. You've written so much on this topic. You've thought about it. You've researched it. And so I just really appreciate you taking the time to share this insight, share this lesson. It's something that we can all apply. And so I just want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and sharing that lesson, Gretchen.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Mickles and Dimes with Gretchen Rubin. What great lessons Gretchen shared. There is no magic one-size-fits-all solution for happiness. Just as there is no one best way to cook an egg or to be a leader, there is no one best way to be happy. For Gretchen, she had to learn that she didn't like games, but did like exercise. That when it came to sweets, abstinence was as easy for her as temperance was difficult. In other words, she had to find what worked best for her. In the words of Yogi Berra, if you can't imitate them, don't copy them. And in the words of Gretchen Rubin, by accepting ourselves and then expecting more of ourselves, we can gain the self-knowledge that will help us find the path that is best for us. It's a simple idea. Please take it seriously. Nate Mickle here with two quick requests. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and give it a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. Thanks for your support.